The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, so it's Pride Month, right? And only there's really only one thing out there that we corporately talk about pride. Of course, that's a Gay Pride Month, which is June, which really it's LGBTQ plus, because you got to get enlightened enough to know that it's gone well beyond just kind of quote unquote Gay Pride Month. Anyway, sorry I missed you yesterday. Played a great Theology Thursday from last year with Pastor Andy Davis, who wrote just the best book on sanctification I've ever read, which is why I thought that was a good show to replay. Just had a bunch of things happen yesterday and just couldn't get here, and every once in a while that happens. So sorry I missed you yesterday, but back live today. I'll be off on Monday again because I'm going to be doing the commencement address for our friends at Iron Academy here in the Raleigh area of North Carolina. So that's an honor. I don't want to miss that. So I'm going to be doing that commencement address on Monday. And so Monday's show, I'm going to replay the show I did several weeks ago with Steve Dace, our favorite from The Blaze, who's actually going to be on the third segment today. So we'll get Steve on the horn for the third segment today. Just want to get kind of the top things from the Fauci emails that he's focusing on. And then on Monday, we'll replay the show I did, the full show I did with him, where we shared more about the Fauci and Bargain, the book, the number one bestseller that he co-authored. So that'll be on Monday, just to kind of keep the truth alive. So we'll talk to Steve in the third segment today. But I'll be back live on Tuesday next week. But I did notice, did you see, for you that are on Facebook, on Monday, Memorial Day, I didn't notice anything special going on Facebook. But on starting on June 1st, and I put this up on Facebook today, of all places, when you log into your Facebook, when you first go to your Facebook page, you'll see up at the top where you get the blue logo, right, where it says Facebook. They do this whole Pride Month thing where all these people kind of, you know, cross-dressers, yada, 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 and the rainbow, and then Facebook, the word, flashes back in the rainbow colors. All the different letters change colors, yada, 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 and then it goes back to blue. And obviously, Facebook pushing an agenda, right? They're pushing a worldview. Everybody does. Everybody's got one. Corporations have one, and corporations are becoming increasingly woke. And got into it a little bit on Facebook today with our oldest, Hayden, who's a brilliant young man. And he was like, well, you know, there's mostly profit motive. And I'm like, listen, I understand where you're coming from, but also that it's these large corporations are to think that they don't want to influence culture and the overall societal makeup of the United States, let alone the entire world, is to kind of ignore the obvious. And then, he came back, as he does, because he's my son, and was pushing back on that, hey, listen, you know, these guys are pandering a lot. However, he does see on his Twitter feed, we're talking about my son's Twitter feed, that a lot of young people, and particularly people in the LGBTQ group, are kind of getting sick and tired of all these corporations and in different individuals and corporate entities basically using them to virtue signal, make themselves look good when they don't actually care about the issue at all. Same thing's happening with BLM, all these corporations and white fragility and all that kind of mess. They're all virtue signaling. Why? What's the bottom line there? I think it's two things. Yes, they want profit, and so they're going to do what they can to try to increase their bottom line. But they also want to change society. That's all part of corporatism. Go spend some time on the Great Reset website, which then brings me to the fact that it's a Gay Pride Month. And this is classic Babylon Bee. So if you don't understand what the Babylon Bee website is all about, perhaps this will help you. Headline, first ever Pride Month ruined by 40 days of rain. June 1st, 2021, Mesopotamia, the headline. It was going to be the first ever Pride Month, a celebration of everyone doing everything they feel like doing in their hearts all the time, when it suddenly started raining and didn't stop for 40 days as God tried to wash all the wickedness off the earth. Quote, ugh, well, this ruins everything, said one man who had looked forward to the celebration but was instead climbing to the top of a building to get away from the ever-rising water. This was going to be the celebration unlike anything the world had ever seen, and everyone was looking forward to it except for Noah, a notorious stick in the mud. Quote, "We're all getting ready for a fun party," said Noah's neighbor. "And there he is, working on some boat or something. He won't even wear his pride robe." The boat ended up being a boon for Noah as the flood covered the face of the entire earth and even led to some conspiracy theories that Noah knew this was going to happen. Thanks to all life being wiped out, it will probably be a very long time before there's another Pride Month. Next time, the people plan to use the rainbow symbol to constantly remind God during the festivities that no matter how wicked they get, he said he wouldn't flood them again. From the Babylon Bee. If you don't understand the Babylon Bee is a satirical website, then that you might have been thinking that was just offensive. And whether you know that the website's satirical or not, for some it's still offensive. But Babylon Bee using satire and irony to make a point. And I think it's pretty obvious what the point is. So what do you do with that? There's a guy named Beckett Cook who had a very successful career out in L.A. He was part of the movie industry. I think he was set design, whatever, stuff like that. And lived as a gay man for most of his life and then got saved. And so Beckett Cook has been shunned by many in Hollywood for obvious reasons. And then he wrote a great book, but this was a great article he put out a year ago during Pride Month, Gay Pride Month, June. But this was last year in 2020. So I wanted to work through parts of this article that Beckett wrote. I'll get him on the show one of these days. But just some great points that I think we need to remember, because we can engage these things from a political perspective, a cultural perspective. And I understand that. I do it myself. But obviously, we always need to have a gospel perspective on these things as well. So here's what he wrote. This is the false promise of gay pride. I'll start it and I'll finish it on the other side of the break. Then we've got some other issues to deal with. We're going to talk to Steve Dace in the third segment. Then I'll finish up today talking about the death of the informed Christian, a great little blog post that I was sent recently. And I want to finish with that today. But this is Beckett Cook. Let me just get this started. Growing up gay in Dallas, Texas in the 1980s was no walk in the park. The world around me explicitly opposed that lifestyle. My Roman Catholic family, my peers at my Jesuit high school, and society at large were more or less in agreement that homosexual behavior was wrong. The majority of folks, especially those in my sphere, were just plain disgusted by the idea of it. Needless to say, I kept the closet door locked and threw away the key. Then we're going to go on with this article because he talks about his first gay pride parade he went to when he was 16 and what that did to him. And all the lies and all the darkness there, all the deception, which is sad but true. And then we'll bring it back and around to the gospel, which is awesome. So we'll do that when we come back. Then we're going to talk to Steve Dace about the Fauci email dump and see what he's been pulling out of that. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Got your colors on today. Make sure you get your colors on. June, it's Gay Pride Month. Now it's LGBTQ plus all the other things, transgenderism, what have you. And please don't get me wrong. I've been dealing with this subject ever since I became an activist, going all the way back to 2004. And I realized that it's an emotionally charged thing. So just as a disclaimer, I do not hate homosexuals or transgendered people. I have a problem with some of the more ardent activists in that realm, especially when they're pushing into childhood years and manipulating and misleading. I think that's child abuse, frankly. But on an individual level, it requires time and patience and prayer and love and compassion and to love people kind of where they're at. And not to make excuses, not to just blow it off. You can't be all grace and no truth or you're a coward. But neither should you be all truth and no grace, because then you're just a bully. So we try to balance that, right? So that's why I particularly enjoy reading things from gay men and women that have left the lifestyle because of their newfound faith in Jesus Christ. So this is one of them, Beckett Cook, who used to be very successful out in Hollywood. He wrote a book, and he's doing a lot of speaking and stuff now, so I don't know that he needs Hollywood's numbers anymore. But he was talking about growing up in Dallas in the 1980s and, of course, being gay. In the 1980s, particularly in the South, would not be easy. Comes from a Roman Catholic family. Then he goes on to say this. The false promise of gay pride is this article he wrote. But my first experience at a gay pride parade when I was 16 began to unlock that closet door. Now, listen, this is very important, friends, because you have to understand what happens here. what's going on relationally in with a communal aspect, where if you're a homosexual and now transgendered, you're going to feel like an outcast in many parts of the culture. So you're going to want to go to where you're loved and accepted for who you are, where you're at, right? So you find a tribe that will take you in. So that's what he's talking about. I finally found a world where I felt fully accepted, right? Because that's where we're at. I've got an author coming on here in the near future, Carl Truman, who wrote an incredible book, tracing back philosophically, how do we end up to the point today where somebody says, hey, listen, I'm a woman trapped in a man's body. And a good chunk of the culture just goes, oh, okay. How do we get there? So we'll talk to Carl later this month. A world where my secret desires didn't seem abnormal. A world that promised unadulterated freedom. At these events, homosexual behavior was not only accepted, it was celebrated. In fact, the concept of homosexual behavior was all but out of fashion as the more potent idea of gay identity emerged. Gone were the days of homosexuality being some kind of illicit or deviant sexual behavior. A new day was dawning where I could be proud of not only my behavior, but also, and more importantly, my identity. And what better way to celebrate this new reality than with an extravagantly Baroque parade replete with rainbow flags? It all signified a kind of revolution, a revolution that would become more powerful and consequential than the sexual revolution of the 1960s. So again, applying a biblical understanding here. We suppress the truth, we replace it with a lie. We don't want to hear the gospel. We don't want to be exposed to the truth because our deeds are dark. We know our deeds are dark because everybody knows, Romans 1, that God exists, and with God comes a moral law. You have a conscience and you have the law written on your heart, Romans 8. And so everybody knows, everybody's in on it, right? Everybody knows God exists. Everybody has a conscience. Everybody has a sense of right or wrong. That's what our founding fathers would call the natural law. So if you don't like that, you got to push back. You got to destroy it. You put your fingers in your ears and you go blah, 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 whatever it takes, right? Okay, so that's what's going on here. So he finds his tribe where they're going to suppress the truth and replace it with a lie. Beckett goes on. When I first experimented with my sexuality in high school, I felt deep shame each time. That's of the moral law that was written on his heart, okay? I remember these experiences distinctly. It would take days before the shame would subside, but as with any sin, the more you engage in it, the more calloused your heart becomes. Can I get an amen from anybody? By the time I moved to Los Angeles after college, my heart was almost fully hardened. Shame and guilt were finally vanquished from my mind, or so I thought. No matter how hard we try to cover the shame, I believe vestiges of it remain deep inside our souls. I think I always had a sense of shame about my identity and behavior as a gay man, though you would never know it by the considerable number of boyfriends I cycled through, the gay bars I frequented, and the pride parades I attended each year in L.A., New York, and San Francisco. Then, 10 years ago, I had a radical encounter with Jesus that changed everything. Up to that point, I was a practical atheist. Strangers at a coffee shop invited me to their evangelical church in Hollywood, and against my better judgment, I went. That day, I was radically transformed by the gospel. There's no other way to describe it but as supernatural. The love of God overwhelmed my being. I knew immediately that homosexual behavior was a sin and that I have to give it up. But that didn't deter me because I had just met the King of the universe, Jesus, and felt tangibly and practically compelled to leave that life behind, take up my cross, and follow him. My life has never been the same. Gay pride promises much. Liberation instead of constraint. Affirmation instead of condemnation, authentically living as my quote-unquote true self instead of hiding, acceptance instead of rejection, strength instead of weakness. Gay pride paints the picture of a make-believe world where one can glory in their sin with no consequences. Okay, that's why autonomy is such a big deal for human beings. Kill God, give me my autonomy. I'll do whatever I want. I don't want to feel guilt or shame about it, even though you're going to. Okay, this is the spiritual reality that's going on all around us. The gospel, in contrast, he writes, delivers. It delivers freedom from shame instead of endless cycles of guilt, fear, and regret. Adoption as a child of God, created in his image. God's grace and power made perfect in our weakness. Restoration as he makes all things new. The gospel shows us the reality of a God who not only forgives our sins, but rescues us from them and turns the tide in our favor. It offers us life, now and eternally, instead of death. Gay pride had convinced me that black was white, bad was good, sin was sacred. I thought I was sexually liberated for all those years, but I was actually, he writes, in bondage. This is Beckett. What's his last name? Beckett Cook. I was actually in bondage. Gay pride demonstrates the great lengths we are willing to go in order to rationalize sin, even calling something the opposite of what it is, gay pride. Here's this final paragraph. Gay pride was an integral part of my life for 25 years. I'm beyond grateful that Jesus crashed into my life, delivered me from my sin, and transformed my trajectory. Christ showed me that my identity is in him, not my sexuality, and his spirit empowers me to live a life worthy of my calling. I no longer have to pretend that I'm a proud gay man. I can rest in the unshakable joy of knowing that I am a child of God, chosen and loved by the King. So that's what happens, and that's a supernatural act. So if you have somebody in your life that is homosexual, gay, lesbian, even the transgender aspect, okay, realize that we have to share the truth with grace and love and compassion and patience. But ultimately, we have to remember that it's a supernatural thing that has to take place. Okay? Has to. And so, generally, what you're going to... And now we got two different groups here. You got people that claim to be Christians but are also gay and then try to rationalize it. That's called the gay gospel, where they reinterpret obvious passages in Scripture to try to narrow the focus of what the Bible was talking about. That's bogus, and it has been for 2,000 years. That's easily dealt with. But if you're really outside the faith, you don't care what the argument is. The Bible also says that spiritual truths are spiritually discerned, right? So if somebody's lost, they're not willingly going to submit themselves to the truth of God's word, no matter how obvious it is. Then you have people that are outside the faith, plain and simple outside the faith, like Beckett Cook was. And once again, that's supernatural. Pray, love, stay in the conversation. Share the truth with grace and compassion and patience. But realize you can't close that deal. You can't change them. But you can be an emissary of the one who can. All right? Remember that, especially this month. This is Steve Noble. We'll be back with Steve Dace right after this.
Oh, angels sent from above. You know you make my world light up.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Well, the Washington Post got 866 pages of Fauci emails between March and April of last year. BuzzFeed, who, if you want to know what's going on in Ariana Grande's life, you could go to BuzzFeed. Or, in this case, they got 3,200 pages of Fauci's emails between January and June of last year. Some of them were heavily redacted. But there's a lot out there. But maybe it's just we're just overreacting, because President Biden did come out and say he still was very confident in Pope Fauci. So I don't know. Maybe we're all crazy, especially Steve Dace from The Blaze. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for your time, as always. All right. So I know you've been plowing through, you guys and your team have been plowing through all these 4,000 pages of Fauci emails. What's that revelation done for you, Steve? Because you've been on the forefront of this, trying to help us see the truth for over a year now. And then what issues that you've uncovered have been the biggest revelations for you?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is if there was anything in there that was good for the COVID stand narrative, it's all you would have seen in the media. The fact that they're largely ignoring this is indicative of the fact everything in there is bad. For example, last summer when the frontline doctors had the press conference in D.C., one of them, who the only black member who was literally from Africa, had a couple of views on things that are considered unenlightened by today's secular media.
Yep.
So they disregarded everything else that entire group said and just did all of their media coverage on her, on those views they found repugnant. If they could have done the needle in the haystack here, if anything in those 3,000-plus emails, anything specifically, made the narrative surrounding Fauci and COVID stand look good, that's all you would have seen, and they would have memory-holed everything else. The fact that you haven't seen that indicates everything in there that it confirms goes against their narrative, because everything in there that it confirms goes against their narrative, everything.
Right.
And verifies the premise of everything we've written about in our best-selling book, Fauci and Bargain.
And by the way, everybody, because I'm not going to be on the air Monday, I'm replaying the show that Steve and I did about a month ago that was exclusively about the Fauci and Bargain, which is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you need to get that and read it and be informed and be enlightened so that you can be effective. So what were some of the things that you found in these emails, Steve, that did anything surprise you at all, first of all? And then what do you think are the most important things that we need to pull out of these?
He was concerned about the gain-of-function research right away, which he claims he had no involvement in, under oath to Congress, that masks don't work and it's silly to be wearing them, that he was alerted by other scientists right away of the dubious origins of the virus. The virus's initial behavior doesn't line up with what they understand of the natural laws. I mean, these are all, and so if people were wondering, it was actually 1 week ago, last Friday, that a massive retcon went underway of trying to, I mean, it was a couple of Fridays ago, of trying to now get out ahead of this story and admit that the virus may have leaked from a lab, to the point that then Facebook said you won't get banned anymore for claiming the virus is man-made.
Right.
And you may have been wondering, what precipitated this?
Yeah.
Well, now you know. They knew that these FOIA emails were coming, and they had to get out ahead of that narrative. Otherwise, it would have made an even bigger crater in their coverage than it already did. And so this was an attempt to retcon themselves ahead of that, because all of the things that you would have been accused of being a conspiracy theorist for asserting over the last year have all proven to have at least some form of merit, which is why in the last year and a half of this, Steve, has basically turned me into Alex Jones with Bible verses.
Yeah, right. Yep. Yeah, that's the perspective. You're nutty. You're crazy. You don't understand Romans 13. You don't love your neighbor. Yada, 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 yada. I mean, it's amazing. There was a thing that came out the other day, Steve, that I put up on Facebook. You may have seen this. Kind of a bar graph, and it gave people some options in terms of what they believe about the virus. And when you look at high school or less, most of them just simply said not sure. But the next biggest group, it was created in a laboratory and released on purpose. And that green line doesn't shift a whole lot when you go to some college grad, and even post-grad people did not dismiss that. Most people are like, well, I'm not sure what happened. But most people are at least suspect at some point. My question for you is, and this is both of our cynical natures, is this going to matter at all? Is this going to play out at
mattering.
All?
It's mattering quite a bit. It's further indication of that their entire narrative is in retreat. They don't have a leg to stand on, and it's why, for example, today the head of the CDC came out and just lied, flat out lied, that there is a huge influx in our ICUs of adolescents with COVID. That's just not true,
right.
And their own data indicates this. How quickly that lie was crushed and destroyed. Only one major media outlet I saw ran with it originally, and to no one's surprise, that was CNN.
Yeah,
but a bunch of righty media who, frankly, at this time last year, thought I was nuts, thought I was insane, that clearly I don't know something that Trump doesn't know and should listen to Fauci. Many of my peers were telling me that last year. The amount of time that CDC attempt to try to convince people to get your kids signed up to be lab rats for their experimental injections, that thing was eradicated, Steve, in 10 minutes.
Yeah,
that would not have happened a few months ago. I don't know that it would have happened a few weeks ago. I think they've lost every amount of standing they had. The ground has shrunk beneath their feet, and these emails just further accelerate that. New York State now is poised to announce that they're not going to have masks in schools or indoor for anybody any longer.
Any summer programs, camp stuff, they're freeing all that up.
They're out of bullets now. Everything... The emperor is without clothes now, Steve.
Yeah, and a good chunk of Americans are willing to say, yep, by golly, he's naked, and I'm willing to admit it. And that took some enough going on, Steve, as you know, because people generally are kind of weak in their constitution. It took enough people, just like now. Now you can go to Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever, and you're going to see more than half the people not wearing masks. It was amazing how easily people are led astray, but they have to be led back to courage as well. Do you think Fauci lasts through the end of the year?
No, I don't think he lasts to the end of the year. I unless more comes out, we don't know, which wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't surprise me if he was given a soft landing, some kind of presidential medal of freedom and enjoy your retirement. But frankly, you're just too politically toxic. And you also have some embattled blue state governors that are up for re-election or next year or facing recall this year. They need an excuse to give to voters for their terrible decisions. Why not just blame it on him? Say, hey, I was just following Fauciism, and now he's totally discredited, and just he's your sacrificial lamb. You pass your sins on to him and let him get gutted out there outside the city gate.
Yeah, put your hand, hey, Gavin, put your hand on Fauci's head and then send him on out into the pasture. and yes. everybody gets away with it. But that's my final question. Do they get away with it? We wrecked our economy. This has been a worldwide tsunami. We've changed the lives of millions of Americans. Who knows? Yeah. God knows what we've done to our youth with this whole mess for the last 16 months. Do they just get away with it?
That's up to us. The system is not going to hold itself accountable. Beelzebub isn't going to cast out Beelzebub. So this right. is up to us. See, we're not a nation of laws, and we never have been. We're a nation of political will, and we always will be. It'll be up to you and me and people listening to shows like yours to demand that the people they elected that claim to speak for them hold people's feet to the fire, hold them accountable, not just at the ballot box, that's important, but then also after they get elected. What are you going to do about this? What are you going to do to the people who did this to us? What are you going to do to make sure they can't ever do this again? Like my state of Iowa, last week our governor signed a bill that was a forever mask mandate ban. You can't ever do a mask mandate like ever again, ever. Wow. Right? Those sorts of things we need to demand from our elected representatives because we're the leaders. It's government by the consent of the governed. They govern directly by our consent. So you have only the power that you assert. It's time to assert that power.
Yeah, and coming up next year, obviously, we have an opportunity nationwide in both the House and the Senate to take back control. And if we can do that, either one, but obviously it would be awesome to have both. Then you can start what you've been talking about, I've been talking about, is a 9/11 style commission to really go mm-hmm. after this. Because it ain't going to happen as long as the Democrats control Congress and the White House. But if we can get Congress back, then you have to hold their feet to the fire, unfortunately, because I'm not so sure they would do it anyway unless we hammer them. But that's what we have to do.
They won't do it unless we hammer them. So we have to hammer them. If you have not been taught over the last year and a half that the system is not just going to by default acknowledge your God-given rights, then I think you should consider that you have been given a lobotomy without yeah. your consent, okay? That you're just, at this point, willfully ignorant. Or maybe you were an Anabaptist in a past life and belong in an Amish colony and just don't have any rancor for any form of cultural confrontation. Because if our dander's not up and we're not ready to go to war after what has happened the last year and a half, then at this point, we need to get woke, but in the literal term or definition of that term, wake up.
Yeah, exactly. Steve Dace, The Blaze, Monday through Friday, 12 to 2. Appreciate your time as always. Get some rest, buddy. We appreciate you.
You got it, brother. Take care. Amen. God bless.
Talk to you. You too. That was Steve Dace. Great as always. And boy, he's burning the candle at both ends. And pray for that guy. Pray for people that are on the front lines that have a voice and have a platform. Pray for me, yes, but Steve Dace got a much bigger platform than I do. He's a brother in Christ, and he's speaking the truth, so we need to pray for them and support them. That's why I would tell you, be a part of the Blaze. Help support that. We'll be right back.
There's a man going around taking names, and he
yep.
decides who to free
yep.
and who to blame.
True that. Tell it.
Everybody will
yes.
be treated all the same.
Go, Johnny. It's Johnny Cash.
There'll be a golden ladder reaching down.
Uh-huh. Remember, the day's coming.
When the man comes around.
That's right. That day's coming. And I hope you're ready. It's great hearing from Steve Dace. On that note, we were talking about how mainstream media would have been all over these Fauci emails if they could use something to support the narrative, but they can't. So they're ignoring it because it's bad. Bad for Fauci, bad for the COVID movement, bad for the masking, bad for all that stuff, bad for the shutdowns. And so you've got interesting groups finding out this information. Washington Post was no surprise, but BuzzFeed going after through Freedom of Information Act, getting 3,200 pages of Fauci emails from last year, first half of last year is awesome. And then there's this, Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair, a months-long Vanity Fair investigation, interviews with more than 40 people and a review of hundreds of pages of U.S. government documents, including internal memos, meeting minutes, so on and so forth, stemming in part from large government grants supporting controversial virology research, hampered the U.S. investigation into COVID-19's origin at every step. So you're wondering, because all of a sudden, masks are coming off in states like North Carolina and other places, and then like now all of a sudden, a couple weeks ago, well, maybe it did start in the lab. Maybe there's something to this virology. Like, what's going on? To Steve Dace's point, because they knew the Freedom of Information Act emails were coming. So you got to get ahead of that. This is all a big Game of Thrones. is what it is. Politics. That's what it is. You're just playing with the information, manipulating, trying to manipulate people's perceptions in order to maintain your power. So you do whatever you got to do, right? So not, that's why we're allowed to talk about this now. And Facebook will allow you to talk about COVID-19 origins. In one State Department, the U.S. investigation, in one State Department meeting, officials seeking to demand transparency from the Chinese government say they were explicitly told by colleagues not to explore the Wuhan Institute of Virology's gain-of-function research because it would bring unwelcome attention to U.S. government funding of it. Oh, yeah, we don't want that. In an internal memo obtained by Vanity Fair, Thomas DiNanno, former acting assistant secretary of the State Department's Bureau of Arms Control, Verification and Compliance, well, I'll put that on your business card, wrote that the staff from two bureaus, his own and the Bureau of International Security and Nonproliferation, quote, warned leaders within his bureau not to pursue an investigation into the origin of COVID-19 because it would open a can of worms if it continued. Are you kidding me? The author writes in National Review. Whose side are they on? As officials at the meeting discussed what they could share with the public, they were advised by Christopher Park, the director of the State Department's biological policy staff, not to say anything that would point to the U.S. government's own role in gain-of-function research, according to documentation of the meeting obtained by Vanity Fair. Some of the attendees were absolutely floored, said an official familiar with the proceedings, that someone in the U.S. government, quote, make an argument that is so naked against transparency in light of the unfolding catastrophe was shocking and disturbing. No kidding. The story gets even more shocking. For most of the past year, the lab leak scenario was treated not simply as unlikely or even inaccurate, but as morally out of bounds. Remember that? Because you're obviously a racist. You're slamming all Chinese people. Then when Asians are abused here in this country, which happens, that's why. Because we started to point to China as maybe an insidious orientation point instead of accidental with the bat that ended up in somebody's soup, right? In late March, former Centers for Disease Control Director Robert Redfield received death threats from fellow scientists after telling CNN that he believed COVID-19 had originated in a lab. Quote, I was threatened and ostracized because I proposed another hypothesis, Redfield told Vanity Fair. I expected it from politicians. I didn't expect it from science. Hypothesis? If someone is so upset about a theory you've offered that they threaten to kill you over it, your theory is probably right. Nobody makes death threats over contentions that this moon is made of green cheese. Then there's this simple, clear, illuminating point from a professor who's been ahead of the curve on this from the start. Richard Ebright, Board of Governors Professor of Chemistry and Chemical Biology at Rutgers University, no dummy, right, said that from the very first reports of a novel bat-related coronavirus outbreak in Wuhan, it took him, quote, a nanosecond or picosecond, unquote, to consider a link to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Only two other labs in the world, in Galveston, Texas, and right here near me, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, were doing similar research. It's not a dozen cities, he said. It's three places. Three places in the world are doing this kind of research on coronavirus in bats. And a novel coronavirus most similar to those found in bats causes a global pandemic that started in one of those three places? What are the odds? Yep. What are the odds? So pray, continue to pray for truth, justice, revelation of the truth, okay? Here's some good news. University of Georgia system rejects COVID vaccine mandates for its 26 campuses. That's awesome. I love this. The University of Georgia system, representing 26 public universities, has rejected a COVID vaccine mandate for students, faculty, and staff. Isn't that great? Quote, institutions are not responsible for assessing current COVID-19 vaccination rates for their institution, the system said. System officials also fully vaccinated people can resume campus classes and other activities without physically distancing. And listen to this, unvaccinated individuals, which they can't verify because of HIPAA, are strongly encouraged to continue socially distancing from others when possible. No mention of the mask, none of that mess. So there's that. That's good news, right? However, listen to this. The University of North Carolina system has rejected any COVID vaccine mandate after it determined it did not have the legal authority to require one, at least not yet. Why? Because right now it's still called an experimental vaccine. But at some point this summer, you can bet on this, or by the fall at the latest, the FDA will grant full endorsement of all the three plus COVID vaccines. And at that moment, when they do it, when it moves from experimental to fully FDA approved, then any school, any employer can mandate it, just like they would MMR or whatever else. So that's coming. Okay, but to Steve Dace's point, you're going to have to fight. Okay, the question is, will you? I'm going to save the death of the informed Christian for next week. Okay, I'm going to get to that. Great little blog talking about critical thinking and being willing to have conversations, ongoing conversations with people on the other side of the aisle. But this one's kind of funny. This is a great example. Do I think this is going to make some big difference in the world? No, I do not, this particular story. But it is a great example of acting on one's conscience and doing what one can. And that's what you're held responsible for from a biblical perspective. God's not going to hold you responsible for the salvation of the world. He's going to hold you responsible for being salt and light and sharing the gospel within your sphere of influence. That's what you're responsible for. That's your circle of accountability, okay? So that's why I think this article, this story is pretty cool. This just happened the other day. Surrey County commissioners here in North Carolina are pushing back against major corporations for what they described as a bigoted, left-wing, divisive political agenda. Listen to this. It sounds kind of trite, but it really isn't. The first step, removing all Coca-Cola machines from government buildings. The Board of County Commissioners voted to remove roughly 12 of them from county property earlier this month. You're sitting there going, 12 Coca-Cola machines? What's the big deal? Well, let's keep reading. I don't think, this is a quote, I don't think that the taxpayers and citizens of this county want us to spend their money or anything that is on anything that is associated with the social justice, woke, critical race theory, intolerant, bigoted Democrat mob that is so prevalent in our country today, said Commissioner Eddie Harris. It's 12 drinking machines. But you know what? It will send a little bitty message that we're not going to take it here in Surrey County. And you could take your Coke machines and take them back to the house. Right? Good for you. Push back. That's great. The board also plans to consider a measure that would prevent Surrey County tax dollars from going to companies that participate in what they call cultural re-education training policies or other left-wing partisan political activity. Companies would need to disclose any such affiliations before receiving money, meaning the county, Surrey County, is not going to do business with any of these companies if they have all this kind of woke agenda and diversity training and white privilege training, yada, yada. The vote to remove the Coke vending machines from county buildings passed 3-2. The second step will probably arise at a future meeting when the county budget's discussed. I'm ready to take a stand, said Commissioner Van Tucker in supporting the latter measure. I'm tired of it. I'm sick of this wokeness. It just about makes me want to throw up, he said. So there is the lesson. You do what you can, okay? Now, if all you do is spend your time, talent, and treasure fighting cultural rot, and you don't do anything about, well, your own sanctification or the gospel or just being salt and light in the world from a biblical perspective, God's truth. But man, you're out there, you're just a culture warrior extraordinaire, but you leave the gospel out or you leave the things of God out. That's an incomplete use of your life. We have to be about all of our Father's business. And so that's why I love that story, because they're doing what they feel like they should do. They're pushing back. I'd love to see entire states do that. Thank you, Governor Ron DeSantis, because his state, under his leadership, is doing that. That's federalism. That's what our founding fathers envisioned, by the way, that the federal government would be small and contained and the state governments would be more expansive and independent. And if you don't like the federal government coming down and telling you what to do in your education system, you just say, hey, thanks, but no thanks. Well, then we're not going to give you our money. Fine. We won't take it. And you can take your Coke machines with you too. That's just a little thing. So you do what your conscience calls you to do with engaging these things. And I applaud North Carolina County, Curry County, for taking a stand. You may say it's only 12 Coke machines, but that's 12 is infinitely more than zero. And they're speaking up. And it's showing up in the news cycle. And other people hear the story, and they can maybe borrow some of the courage from Curry County for themselves. That's the definition of encouragement, by the way. And I think we all need a lot more of that. I hope you have a great weekend. I'll be back, not on Monday. On Monday, you'll hear my interview recently with Steve Dace on his book, The Faucian Bargain. We'll replay that one on Monday. I'm doing the commencement address for our friends at Iron Academy. That's a great honor, but I'll be back live on Tuesday. In the meantime, I hope you have a great weekend. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
another program powered by the Truth Network.